And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Friday, September 11th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF, Melody.
Yay! I was just telling Todd, the producer, it's like this four-day weekend seems a lot longer with Monday being a holiday, and so I'm ready to get back to my routine next week. We'll be here bright and early Monday morning, and let's see how gold feels about this week. Not so much, but we're still holding in there. It was down 410 today, 1943 in the New York spot price aftermarket. Silver was down 11 pennies at $26.85. Platinum was down a dollar, 931, and palladium was up 16. So, you know, my little theory yesterday, you know, where we had a one-day wonder for platinum, that's all it was, a one-day wonder. So palladium was up 16, 2,347. The USDX today was down 0.13, 93.25. So interesting to see the pressure on gold today. Paper markets today, they've been all over the page. They were up a couple hundred points, down a couple hundred points. Now the Dow is up 131, 27,665. The NASDAQ was down 66 points, 10,853. The S&P barely unchanged, up a point at 3,340. 10-year yield, 0.67%. You know, fairly quiet overseas. And you know, I get tired. I like reporting the news and the stories that mainstream doesn't talk about, but then it feels like we're the only ones that are talking about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like anyone else is.
It's lonely out there sometimes.
It is, and it truly is amazing that it's just a hush on what's really going on and some of these numbers. And we're going to talk about some of these numbers today. I don't know if you have it in what we're going to talk about today, but I just want to make a comment about California, Oregon. We've got tons of clients in California, tons of clients in Oregon. One of our producers, Frank, was in Oregon, so I hope he's doing okay. Washington State. So I don't know what's going on with the West Coast, but our thoughts and prayers are with them. Be safe. Supposedly 200 fires. It's California is basically out of control, and it's growing bigger and moving faster. I know what happens when this time of the year you get the Santa Ana winds down there in Southern California. And with that type of brush they have, man, it just explodes.
It's a heart-wrenching story, Melody, of a couple. I believe it was in Oregon, who were staying in their homes, and then all of a sudden two fires nearby, different fires, merged and spread very quickly. They called their son, who didn't live at home any longer, and said they're taking refuge in the pond next door. Mm-hmm. And now... you know, the day after that phone call, they're still missing. So that just a terrible example. One of more and more that are starting to surface as more and more people die and either aren't able to or don't heed warnings from the safety, public health safety officials.
Living out in the West. And I've experienced nothing like this, of course, but I have experienced fires out of control and heading our direction. And the first thing that you do think about is protecting your home. You do the watering down the root. I mean, you do the simple things that you do. And what's frightening about how quickly you get that little bit of wind and that type of brush, that sagebrush, you got pine trees. You don't have hardwoods like you have in the East. You have pine trees. And they don't do any controlled burning anymore. Very little. And that did help. It's because then it's easier to control when you have a fire. And they eliminated a lot of this controlled burning because, you don't want to hurt the forest and blah, 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 the forest and so forth. But it does help.
Ongoing drought, too. They just have...
Right. But the point is that they don't do these controlled burnings. They don't clean up all that dried brush. Then you have the droughts.
Yeah.
You get the wind, and it travels fast. And I think people don't appreciate how fast it can travel. So anyway, our thoughts and prayers are with those folks out there. Be safe. And heed the warnings. And if you have family out there and friends, call them and encourage them to, because there might come a time. I know Mary Ellen, who works for here at Discount Gold and Silver, her family lives in, not in San Francisco, but in the Bay Area, I guess, maybe a little south of that, and she's concerned about, can they even get out? So don't wait, just like when hurricanes come, tornadoes, and even a financial storm. How do you like this segue? Even a financial storm, don't wait until the last minute, or wait until you see it at the horizon, or wait until it's knocking at your door. Because this is the same thing. You can lose your financial stability, your financial wealth, things that you have worked so hard for, saved for, planned for, can be gone in a whisper. And that's just, it's life. Deal with it. But when you get the proper warnings, heed the warnings. So, and this is what we do. You should be heeding, you should heed the warnings of this financial calamity that we have coming down our street. We often talk about inflation. Well, we're beginning to see it tick up a little bit from the government's numbers. Lord, if you listen to our numbers, it's much, much higher. But we'll just take their numbers just for fun. They're looking at, they're saying, now get this. Dave, I'm sorry. Who believes this stuff?
I'm afraid it's too many people who don't know any better, who just don't have the time or wherewithal to follow it as closely as folks like we do.
I mean, here they're saying the reason inflation picked up in August was due to a monthly gain in used car costs since 1969. Are you really kidding me? Oh yeah, we're gonna blame the inflation uptick in August on used cars. Yeah, let's do that. Anyway, I don't know if I'm understanding this properly, but that's what it says. The consumer price index rose 1.3% from a year ago after a 1% annual increase in July. The CPI climbed 0.4% from the prior month following a 0.6 advance. The median projection of economists called for a 1.2% year-over-year rise and a 0.3% gain on a monthly basis. So, let's exclude the food and fuel costs. But that also increased 0.4% from the prior month. and a 0.6% jump in July. And that was the largest in almost three decades. That's in their books. I think they need to see my books and my receipts, what you pay for groceries and what you pay for energy. Let's take a look at those receipts and let's figure out what the real inflation cost is. But here, let's get back to these used cars that they're saying they have, there was a surge of a 5.4% surge in the cost. Both cars and trucks that accounted for more than 40%. I'm assuming these are all used cars. Used cars and trucks.
Yes.
You would think that the cost of cars and trucks would be going down. Except for the fact, well, maybe people aren't working.
Yeah. It's a demand-driven thing. They're not buying new right now.
They shouldn't be buying anything if they're not working.
They haven't read that chapter.
They haven't read that chapter yet?
I don't think they have.
But the thing of it is, you could still buy a new car. Cheaper. Not cheaper, but, you know, probably with less down and everything than you can with a used car. But anyway. When people aren't working, you shouldn't be buying anything. So the gain in consumer prices, again, reflects the steady advance in demand for goods and services. And since we've been in a lockdown earlier this year. You know what, Dave? I told you I bought my bicycle.
Yes.
with my government money back in April.
Mm-hmm.
Back in April. So I called them today. It's the first time I called them to get an update. They have on order 800 bikes.
Uh-oh.
There is no inventory to be had. He says if we get any shipments, he says it's either for kids' bikes or bikes that are extra large mountain bikes. And he says we usually get free shipping on 20 or more bikes. If we get delivered, we get free shipping. He says every shipment we get is 15, so we have to pay for the shipping.
Oh, that's low.
And he says the system, he says the bicycle company, he says there are a million bikes behind.
Wow.
How are they ever going to get caught up on that?
Well, hey, as we noted the other day, there are apparently a lot more jobs available out there than there are people looking for jobs. Well, if you're one of those who are looking and can't find what you're looking for, looks like you ought to contact some of the major bike manufacturers.
Unfortunately, they're all overseas, Dave.
Oh, gosh.
Jeez.
Forgot about that minor detail.
But, you know, it's really interesting, and it's just but who talks about the supply chain being broken? And it's just not bikes. It's on various products everywhere. Printers. I talked to the person at the bike shop for a while. He says you can't find printers, home printers. We know you can't find freezers. He says you can't find rubbing alcohol. He says it's weird. He says there's just like little sectors. I says, yeah, all that stuff is probably coming from overseas.
Food. Food supplies are disrupted.
Yeah. But you don't hear about these stories anywhere. Nowhere.
Hey, well, it looks like thanks to a drop in education costs, college tuition fees falling 0.7% in August, the most since 1978, and the education category in general showing its first drop ever, going back to 1993. Kind of doesn't make sense, but you know, these inflation figures would even be higher than they are. Airfares climbing another 1.2%, biggest gain in over two decades.
Hmm. Yeah, it is.
Let's see what our buddy John Williams has to say. I'm sure he's showing rates above 8%.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Well, you know, after jumping to the payroll tax holiday, it's been a month since President Trump had moved to shore up the workers' incomes by giving employers the option of deferring payment or payroll taxes. And it sort of has failed. The effort has failed to energize the economy at all. No major private employer has stepped forward with plans to forego withholding the levy from workers' paychecks. Costco, with 163,000 U.S. employees, they're not participating, and neither is UPS, excuse me, or FedEx. House of Representatives isn't going ahead, concluding it would not be in the best interest of its employees. The Senate's still mulling it over. Trump had pushed his payroll tax referral in a tandem executive move on supplemental unemployment insurance benefits to make up for the congressional impasse over providing additional relief. But again, to me, this was a campaign political event. What did it do? I don't think it did anything, Dave.
Caused a lot of confusion and some angst.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps raised a little bit of hopes among some employed individuals. Mark Zandi, who we quote often from Moody's Analytics, their chief economist, said employers don't see any benefit to their employees from the payroll tax deferral, and to implement it, they would bear significant administrative costs and risks. I mean, only to have to make arrangements to repay the deferral by next April.
And you know, Dave, speaking of payrolls, I just came in on my phone. Bloomberg did a deal. And employees who take up the company's offer to become permanent remote workers, they're all going to get a pay cut. You know, you're going to have companies that are pushing for people to work off base so they can cut your salary, cut your benefits.
Is that what Bloomberg's saying?
It's not his.
Bloomberg's saying?
No,
it's the company saying, I gotcha.
No, Bloomberg isn't saying there. It's a Bloomberg article.
Gotcha.
This is VMware Inc. Said that if you take up the company's offer to work remote, you're going to get hit. You're going to hit in the pocket. Even though it's cheaper for the company, they're still going to cut your pay. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Monday is coming. We're going to start. Can't believe we're in the middle of the month.
It's the waning days of summer.
Merry Christmas, Dave. Good grief. And that'll go by so fast, I want to make sure I don't forget to wish you Merry Christmas. Man, you know, business has sort of entered into a new or the next evolution. You have these companies with enough size or starting to take advantage of the moment. And they're beginning to take advantage of the endless supply of free money from the Fed and go all in on whatever they want. The other day, mall owners Simon Property Group and Brookfield Property Group unveiled plans to acquire substantially all of JCPenney's retail and operating assets for $1.75 billion. We did talk about this a little bit yesterday with Butch, but I think, again, it's worth repeating. It's the biggest and riskiest of Simon's recent acquisitions through its joint venture with Authentic Brands Group. You know, it includes recently scooped out of bankruptcy Brooke Brothers, Forever 21, Lucky Brand, and portfolio of brands known as Spark, S-P-A-R-C. Now, doubling down on malls, you know, you might think it's a little bit of a risky strategy. But hey, with the Fed seen as guaranteed to bail out credit markets if the asset prices fall too far, hey, these big companies, they see the green light. They're going to take risks, and they have nothing to worry about. There's no consequences. Hey, if things go bad and ideas flop, hey, companies can simply borrow more in the credit markets at some very, very low rates. Investors have shown they will buy up debt, even at negative interest rates, or from companies literally barred from operating. And again, this is largely because the Fed has backstopped the market, and they have purchased billions of dollars in bonds from these large companies. Dave, it just makes me sick.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about this in the third segment of the program. But, you know, better yet, I mean, SoftBank showed with its recent $4 billion options buying spree, outrageous. I think it ought to be abolish the practice. Companies can simply make these huge bets in the stock market going up to raise money. So Simon and his partners can blitz shopping malls or 8-track cassettes or the return of Tab Cola with no real fear of running out of money or opportunities to get more and try again if at first you don't succeed, Melody. On the other hand, small businesses, mom, pops, aunts and uncles, granny and gramps, without access to the Fed's money machine or public debt markets, well, they're running on fumes. And many of them have already closed their doors for good. More than 1 in 3 of those surveyed recently by Too Big to Fail Goldman Sachs said they expect to run out of cash before the end of the year without more aid from Congress. Or presumably a miraculous turnaround in the economy, in the job market. An increasing number of U.S. households say they're going without food, and many of the 30 million Americans who are collecting unemployment benefits are having to cut back on basics like groceries. This new normal, Melody, is fueling intense distrust of the financial sector. A recent poll shows 62%, that's nearly two-thirds, have little or no trust in the Fed. I'm actually surprised it's that high, compared to 51% in May. That's a change in 11 percentage points. That's what, 20% just over the summer. A Magnify Money survey last month found just 17% of Americans say they completely trust their money in the stock market. Wow. There are a lot more Americans who have at least small amounts through their 401ks and IRAs, and only 5% of women do. 23%, listen to this, don't trust any financial source. One quarter of Americans, that includes financial advisors, journalists, Wall Street analysts, you name it. That's a recipe for a lot of ill-informed decisions, Melody, which will only add to market volatility. Stay safe out there, my friends. Invest in gold and silver.
You know what, Dave, back in the 2008 Great Recession, there was a program, I can't remember what they tagged the name with. I don't know if it was TARP or, but anyway, where you could get loans from the bank, and if the business that you were buying failed, you didn't have to pay it back. You know, and this is the same thing. It's just, you know, you can borrow at low rates, and hey, if it's successful, great. Mm-hmm. If it isn't, you have no consequence. No consequences. Just go find another one.
Yep.
Go find another one. All on the taxpayers, on your dollar. Your dollar. Your fiat dollar. And then you want to know what's making this economy go? What makes these stock markets high? This morning I was up early, 5 o'clock. And I was watching CNBC. And there was a segment on there. Inside trading. It was tagged. I don't know if it was tagged insider trading or something like that. And they listed the 5 top companies who were buying back their shares. And I'm thinking, I mean, isn't that kind of, I mean, you're not so, even to tag something inside trading or insider trading or whatever it might be, that's supposed to be against the law, isn't it, Dave?
Well, so
didn't
is
little Martha, didn't little Martha Stewart go to jail for that?
So is stock buybacks, unless of course you didn't take a Paycheck Protection Program loan, in which case it's probably business as usual for the biggest of the bigs.
Yeah, although that's what this was, though, the 5 top companies who bought back the most shares.
Well, you know, if that was a program that was meant to feature bad boys, well then good for pointing it out. But if it was just sort of like, here are the bragging rights.
It was bragging rights.
Yeah, then that's,
yep.
That's not right.
You know, we're heading into the holidays. It's going to be interesting to see just how many of these retailers are going to be hiring. You know, so it might be helpful for a lot of people that are out of work this time of the year where they might be able to, you know, go to work for UPS and so forth. But we're not quite sure at this point how many they're going to be hiring. You know, so far we've heard hundreds of thousands of workers are kind of preparing for a holiday shopping season. Americans spent more than $750 billion on holiday shopping in 2019. I can't imagine it's going to be the same or even close. Not when you have half the country, 20 million people out of work. Online and other non-store sales, which had steadily increased over the years, made up roughly of $168 billion, or 23% of that total. You know, you do have a lot more to make up for the smaller, socially distanced crowds in stores. Retailers may spread sales events out over a longer period of time and offer more online sales. Dave, is the government going to allow people to go into stores to shop for Christmas?
Well, it depends on, probably depends on your governor. I guess we'll know in short order. It seems as though, at least this week's news, they're more relaxation of restrictions across the country as a whole than there are tightenings. So that's an interesting question. And even if people are allowed to go in, I suspect, like many other things we're seeing now, that it's going to be a season of online shopping. But now we have these issues with the Postal Service. It might be a good year to do your shopping early, whether you're doing it in person or online. Now we are seeing L Brands, who is parent to Victoria's Secret, Bath and Body Works, hiring 4,000 seasonal workers. Michaels, the arts and craft chain, wants to hire over 16,000. 1-800-Flowers.com, 10,000 seasonal associates. FedEx, 70,000. That's an increase of over 25% from last year. UPS, over 100,000, it says. Now, an influx of new job openings certainly is welcome news, particularly in these times, but these temporary roles account for only a fraction of the nearly 30 million Americans who are collecting jobless benefits, at least as of the end of August. Melody.
Well, you know, let's see. Yes, we do have time. Dave, your latest blog. V-shaped recovery. Tell us about the V-shaped recovery we're experiencing, or are we?
Well, as much as government officials may want us to think so, there are other mainstream economists anyway, in this case, a guy named Steve Ratner, who's worked in a couple of administrations, Democratic and Republican. He's debunking the current theory that a V-shaped recovery is underway. Nor, he adds, is it very, very broad-based, quote-unquote, as claimed this past week, by White House Chief Economic Advisor and Melody's BFF, Larry Kudlow. Those of you who don't listen all the time, that reference is certainly tongue-in-cheek. Now, both Trump and Kudlow took a victory lap a week ago following the news that the economy added about 1.4 million jobs in August, with the unemployment rate falling to 8.4% from, I think it was 9.2. But their proclamations of a V-shaped recovery, where the gains are, in their words, very, very broad-based, Ratner thinks are far off the mark. The economy is coming back from its free fall in the spring, but it's not pretty amazing, as has been claimed. In fact, it's far slower and narrower than even its second quarter collapse. For starters, Ratner says, the job growth that the White House has been touting is just a small fraction of the jobs that have been lost. In April alone, employment fell by nearly 21 million. And in the 4 months since then, less than half of those jobs have been regained. And even more worrisome, Melody, the pace of new job additions has slowed dramatically since June, when the economy added 4.8 million jobs.
Well, Dave, in fact, if the 238,000 temporary census workers are excluded from August numbers, only a little more than 1.1 million Americans were rehired.
Well, that's a good point. And when, you know, I guess the Labor Department's headline unemployment number, the joke of 8.4%, is adjusted for what it calls reclassification errors, which you like to talk about, and rightly so. The actual jobless rate, I shouldn't say actual, the adjusted jobless headline jobless rate is still above 9. if you include the discouraged and those looking for just part-time work or working part-time because you can't find full-time, it's still well into the double digits, 14 to 16%. And if you believe John Williams, who's uses the older government methodologies that reflect things as they were in the 80s with further adjustments, particularly with certain long-term discouraged workers who stopped looking for jobs years ago, he thinks it's, you know, bordering, what, on over 20%. So, you know, just as the job losses related to the pandemic have been disproportionately concentrated among certain demographic groups, so too have these job additions. So they aren't very, very broad-based. And that's because job loss have been concentrated in industries like travel and restaurants and recreation and the like, and are disproportionately staffed by lower-income Americans. Among 19% of those with less than a high school diploma, for example, become unemployed, while employment among those with a college degree is nearly fully returned to pre-pandemic levels. Now, as for the future, roughly 900,000 Americans a week are still losing their jobs, and in just the last few weeks, more than a half dozen major American companies, Melody, have announced plans for new significant layoffs and buyouts. None of these job losses were reflected in the August report. So just when we think it's starting to get better, it's not. But one thing's for sure, this is not a V-shaped recovery. If anything, it's something that begins with a K.
Yes, I agree. I agree. But you know what? I'm not even sure that is it either. I don't know. Naturally you're going to have things bounce back from the lows. I mean, my goodness, the whole country wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So yeah, people are going to come back to work. That's not creating new jobs.
No.
That's just coming back from your layoff job. Yep. Your furlough job. So these are just jobs that were already there. They're not new jobs. I guess it would be the same with every recession. It would be the same, wouldn't it, Dave?
To a certain extent, sure. You want to fill the ones that have been empty.
Well, we'll talk about this either when we come back or at a later date. Lots of things to finish out the program with. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And one more time, good afternoon. Welcome back to Discount Gold and Silver Trading's Financial Survival Program. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking the third segment to finish up some business in the office. We'll hear from her again on Monday. Now, over the past 6 months, one of the biggest stories, of course, has been the Fed's purchases of corporate bonds, either in the primary or secondary markets or via ETFs. Now, as a reminder, the Fed pre-announced its intentions to purchase up to $750 billion in corporate bonds, including certain junk bonds, back in March. They actually started purchasing some bonds in May and bond ETFs in June. By directly entering the corporate bond market, something the Fed didn't even dare to do at the depths of the Great Recession, the Fed created what many believes is the grandest corporate bond bubble and junk bond bubble in particular in history. And as expected, bond prices, stocks, and ETFs all surged, completely disconnected from fundamentals. While bond yields plunged, interest rates plunged as everyone was trying to front-run the Fed's pending massive purchases. Yet something odd happened in August. The Fed didn't buy a single additional ETF. Now, according to the Fed's breakdown of holdings under its secondary market corporate credit facility, as of July 31st, the Fed owned 112,840,734 shares of various ETFs. Fast forward 1 month to August 31st. The number of ETF shares held was exactly the same. Now, looking at the bond data, we see a similar picture. The Fed bought just $421 million in par value of bonds between the end of July and August 28th. That's right, that's $421 million with an M, not billion with a B. And after its modest August purchase, the market value of the Fed's total corporate bond holdings rose by just $435 million. From $3.55 billion to $3.99 billion. And when combined with its almost $8.7 billion in ETFs, this means that as of August 31st, the Fed owned just $12.7 billion in bonds and ETFs. Now, why do I say just $12.7 billion? Well, as pointed out by Zero Hedge's Tyler Durden, not only is the total amount of actual purchases well below the $44.7 billion amount shown in the Fed's weekly statement under the corporate credit facilities line item, more importantly, it's a long way from the $750 billion the Fed initially said it was targeting. And by implication, what investors believed and still largely do, that the Fed is on the hook for, or heading toward, I should say. The fact that the Fed effectively stopped supporting the corporate bond market and didn't buy a single bond ETF last month leads one, well, me anyway, to wonder if that marks a shift in Fed policy. Could it be that the Fed's starting to telegraph to the market that it moved too far, too fast? Jerome Powell said on more than one occasion that the Fed has succeeded in achieving its objective of creating loose credit market conditions. Could it just be that the Fed indeed has succeeded in blowing this bubble in a short amount of time, and that it's perhaps stunned by the magnitude of the bubble and its own success? I guess time will tell. Yeah, we could learn more in terms of signals as early as the FOMC meeting next week. Now, sticking with the Fed for a little bit longer, I mean, every Wall Street bailout program that the Fed's created since last fall, according to the Fed anyway, has been created to help the average American, exceptional as we all are. According to the Fed's term sheet for Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility, or TALF for short, it's going to help, and I'm quoting here, help meet the credit needs of consumers and businesses by facilitating the issuance of asset-backed securities. Woo-hoo! Not to put too fine a point on it, but asset-backed securities and these kinds of derivatives are exactly what blew up Wall Street in 2008, creating the worst economic downturn at that point since the Great Depression. Now, according to the Fed's TALF transaction data, it's made $2.6 billion in total loans to date. And listen to this, 46% of that money, $1.2 billion, went to a company that has four employees, four professional, non-clerical employees. That's according to its own filing with the SEC, that company. Which the Fed's $1.2 billion was loaned at an interest rate ranging from 75 basis points to 1.2%, to 6%, excuse me. The loans are set to expire in 3 years. Now, under the CARES Act, passed by Congress in March, the TALF has received $10 billion in taxpayer support from the U.S. Treasury to eat any losses in that program. Now, on the most recent transaction data report filed by the Fed, it lists the borrower that received that $1.2 bill as ALTA, A-L-T-A, Alta Fundamental Advisors. And it lists the investment manager for the borrower, for ALTA, as Bellstar Management Companies. It turns out both of those companies have holdings previously registered in the Cayman Islands, again, according to their SEC filings. And the Fed's is only selectively providing transaction-level data for this bailout program in particular. The primary dealer credit facility is one of the first bailout programs created by the Fed, and yet it's never provided a drop of information, at least as far as I know, as to who received the billions of dollars in loans under that program. The PDCF was the most notorious of the Fed programs during the Great Recession. You'll remember the Fed secretly funneled almost $9 trillion in cumulative below-market rate loans to the trading units of the biggest Wall Street banks and to their foreign derivative counterparties. And that's according to an audit belatedly and perhaps to some extent begrudgingly made public almost 10 years ago now by the Government Accountability Office. The Fed's hubris from 2007 to 2010 and its multi-year court battle to keep its transactions a secret from us, the American people, make its actions today a critical area where transparency needs to be demanded. Unfortunately, the Fed's dealings so far being essentially ignored by mainstream media and to a large extent by Congress and the White House, which in turn is enabling ever more hubris at our expense. Pay attention to this and report back to you as we learn more over the coming months. Let's see where to go next. Oh, just a couple of shorts. J.P. Morgan Chase found that some of its employees improperly applied for and received pandemic relief money that was intended for legitimate businesses hurt by the coronavirus. The bank, in this case, discovered the actions, all of which were tied to the SBA's Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, after noticing that suspicious amounts of money had been deposited into checking accounts owned by those bank employees. The findings prompted an unusual all-staff message from J.P. Morgan that puzzled many across the industry for its candid admission of potentially illegal acts by some of its own, while not describing just what they had done. Now, we know the SBA disaster loan program had been expanded significantly after the pandemic led to rolling shutdowns across the country earlier this year, leaving many small enterprises in need of a cash lifeline. These loans or grants come directly from the SBA. Okay, where to go in the remaining 5 minutes or so? It's interesting. Melody and I talked earlier this week about the projections of record deficits for the fiscal year ending at the end of this month. And now we're seeing, strange as it may sound, that the federal government is actually paying less as it borrows more. One reason investors appear more comfortable than Congress about funding another leg of stimulus. Interest payments on the federal budget declined about 10% in the first 11 months of this fiscal year, when America was running up its biggest deficit since World War II. Now, over the next few years, servicing the national debt will be cheaper than any time in the past half century, when measured against the size of the economy, that according to the Congressional Budget Office. That's because yields in the $20 trillion U.S. Treasury market plunged to record lows early in the pandemic, and they've risen only slightly since then, even though the supply of debt has surged beyond imagination. Now, borrowing probably won't always be this cheap. It almost certainly won't be. But for now, mainstream economists say the government is far from running up against any financial limits as it seeks to shore up the economy after the wave of shutdowns and layoffs. Concern that the country can't afford much more spending have been voiced by some officials from both parties in recent weeks as stimulus efforts have grinded to a halt and we get closer to elections. Ed Yardini, who's founder of Yardini Research, says, "Now it's not just a question of how much debt is outstanding, but what is the cost to service that debt?" Again, as we mentioned, CBO predicts a deficit of about $3.7 trillion this year. That's 16% of GDP, more than triple last year's figures. Bonds issued to fund that shortfall have pushed the national debt held by the public past $20 trillion, and that's more than the economy's annual output. Yet, the average yield on the debt has dropped to just 1.7% of GDP from 2.4% in December, and it's set to fall even further. Even after a few auctions that saw signs of faltering demand, the government can now borrow for 30 years at below 1.5%. That's astounding. And the Treasury has tilted sales toward longer-term securities, and that's helping to lock in historically low rates for longer periods of time. And the latest long bond auction yesterday drew a solid bid. The idea that governments need financial market approval for their budget policies in any case is definitely being called into question. Yardini coined the term bond vigilantes in the early 1980s. It described investors who were supposed to exert power over governments by selling their bonds or merely threatening to, thus making deficit spending more expensive. Huh. Right now, the dominant presence in the markets is an anti-vigilante, which does the opposite of those things. It's called the Federal Reserve. Fed purchases have siphoned about $1.8 trillion of government debt out of the market since March, while the Treasury was issuing $3 trillion of new bonds. And the Fed's now currently adding about $80 billion of Treasuries a month, notwithstanding, of course, what we mentioned earlier about corporate bonds. It's also promised to keep short-term rates at zeros for the foreseeable future and tolerate above-target inflation while urging the government not to ease up on fiscal stimulus. There's a broad consensus among bond investors that if rates on longer-term government debt can start, you know, starts to creep up, as they've occasionally threatened to, then the Fed can and will step in. Cue the horns. As Yardini puts it, if there were some bond vigilantes still out there to push the bond yields higher, then the Fed will target the bond yields. Cue the horns again. Late last month, Fed Chair Richard Clarida left the door open to a policy of capping Treasury yields at some point, though he indicated that's not imminent. I doubt, or certainly question, whether that will ever come to fruition. Well, in any event, there are limits to government debt. We know that. Gold and silver investors know that. It's going to take a long time to get to the type of inflationary scenario where people thought the dollar was not worth anything. Really? We will see. Alrighty then.
I work all night.
Have you looked at the value of the dollar recently?
I have to pay.
I don't think so. Well, listen, that's all the time we have for today's program. We'll call it a week. Thanks for tuning in to Financial Survival. Again, Melody and I will be back Monday. In the meantime, have a great weekend and be safe out there. Bye-bye.